Yeah, I don't think I have any control over that anymore.
Did you say let me do this?
Yeah, yeah. Let being the word that.
All right, you ready?
Rolling. Please remember the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
You ready?
Ready.
Dave Libby here. We got Jeff Vicente in the house as well, running all of our tech stuff. Welcome to Contraband. He's the band of Sosra, and I get to cackle on there every now and then. Radio. I'm Dave Libby of WarriorService.org and SosraBand.com, and this is Contraband on WDVR at DVRadio.net. Our guest today is Chuck Garrick. Welcome to the show, Chuck. How you doing, man?
I'm great, brother. Thanks right for having me, man.
Right on, man. We're glad to have you here. Been actually wanting to get you in the studio for a while now, and here we are.
And what a studio it is.
It is a nice studio, isn't it?
It's like a, if you could just imagine sort of like this underground, you know, rat infested.
Exactly.
You know,
cockroaches crawling
cockroaches
around.
And all kinds of weird barrels full
cups,
of sort of acid barrel, you know, flowing out of it.
Yeah, cockroaches
I don't know what's
aren't
in there.
That big.
Yeah. I'm just trying to give your listeners sort of an image of what it is.
That's why
that
we
we're
need
here
the,
right now.
That's I mean, why we need the support. We need cans of Raid.
if you hear me at all at any moment say my safety word is get me out of here. If you hear that at any point, please send a party, a rescue party. At
the
some Orkin point.
Man said that a few times.
I'd let you know where I'm at, but they put a bag over my head on the drive over here, so I have no idea.
Well, either way, we got him here, so. Anyway, so tell us a little bit about what you do with your life. I mean, what do you, you know, you're a musician, obviously.
I am a musician. Right. I've been a musician my whole life. So, right, I mean, that is something I do. It's a big part of my life, but, you know, I'm a father. I'm a husband. Yeah. I'm a human being. I have feelings. I work my ass off. I'm spread way too thin. And I have a good time at what I do. I have a great time at what I do. I enjoy life, man.
Yeah, no, you really do seem to enjoy life.
Yeah.
And you know, I know things get you down, but you don't let it show. And that's...
I don't know if necessarily get me down is necessarily the right description, but I definitely gets me worried at times.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, and I think that's just human nature.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's all good.
That's why they make coffee, so the get me down stuff doesn't
get
really...
get back up.
Yeah, yeah. I'm diabetic, so when I'm down, it means I haven't eaten properly. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Throw a burger in my face, I'll be fine.
You're good to go, huh? Yeah. Right on. So what, you know, tell us about your career. You know, you do have a long career. You've been with many bands.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of things in the music industry.
Yeah, man.
So tell us about it.
Well, it's like, I'm surprised by the resume as well. Sometimes I think somebody brought it up the other day in an interview and I'm like, oh shit, I forgot about that. But I've been very fortunate, especially, you know, growing up in a little town that I grew up in, Lake Tahoe, California, which maybe population 15 or 20,000 when I was a kid. And there was zero music scene. I mean, it was just, you know, Grateful Dead type hippie bands and stuff, which did not interest me at all. But so I started off playing music in school, just like most kids.
Mm-hmm.
Started off playing the trumpet. And I was really into rock and roll. I had two older brothers that were either A, beating the shit out of me, or the other one turning me on to Ted Nugent and Humble Pie and Queen and all that other stuff. So it was an interesting upbringing, but I was always grateful for the music that they brought into my life.
So you get your ass beat and here's your song.
I don't know why my mom thought it was a great idea to get us boxing gloves for Christmas.
Maybe it was for your benefit.
I don't understand that. I mean, I was like 7 and they're like 14. Like, what do you think's going to happen? But yeah, man, so then that kind of changed my life. Like I said, I played trumpet. It and I had a couple neighborhood kids that I was really close to that were really great musicians at a young age. You know, by the time 16 years old, they both, one was a really amazing guitar player. I remember he could play all the Van Halen stuff and Zeppelin and things like that, and his younger brother was a drummer, and you know, they were just missing a bass player kind of thing. And I never really thought about playing an instrument, you know, a stringed instrument at that time, but you know, I wanted to get involved in music. So I purchased a bass through a Sears catalog.
No, tell you a little bit about those of you that don't know.
Yeah, so I'll kind of give you my age. But listen, man, I didn't know, and I'm left-handed, and you know, just a quick backstory was my father had a biker friend that would come over and hang out, and he was a really really cool guy. But he had this old Silvertone guitar and Silvertone amplifier that was had tons of knobs on it and was really cool looking. But I had no idea what, you know, really how to use the guitar, how to play it. But, you know, and I was left-handed, and I remember putting the guitar on, and I just instantly put it on as a normal guitar player, like you would if playing it right-handed. And I just would bang around on that, make noise and all that stuff. But when I ordered my bass, I ordered one through Sears catalog, not even really thinking, but it came through, you know, right-handed. But I've always been, I'm a left-handed person.
Yeah.
But so I remember thinking, oh man, what have I done? I should probably be playing left-handed, but it sort of felt uncomfortable both ways at the beginning. So I just, you know, grabbed that bass and just started taking lessons and figuring out, how to play it.
Yeah.
And I think it was shortly after, we started the band, we joined a talent show just like most kids do. And my first gig ever, played a George Benson song, Give You the Night, and we won. And so that sort of was like this thing, you know, it kind of got me into rock and roll. You know, I don't know, man. There was something about sort of the attention and the fact that it was, you know, it was just such a cool story to tell, you know. So at that age, I was like maybe 13, 14. And then I started to get really into music, and it started to just sort of become my focus. And I started listening to more bands and getting into more things musical. And then concerts obviously became a huge part of my life, where they sort of molded this young kid who didn't know what the hell he was going to do with his life. I mean, honestly, you know, truth be told, is I was terrible at school. I had just zero attention span. I just did not get while I was there and why math was even important or history or any of that stuff.
Most of us joined the military.
You know, which looking back was obviously, my dad was a very bright individual. I mean, he was an extremely intelligent man, and I obviously didn't inherit most of that, but I got the looks.
Yeah.
But no, school was difficult for me, and music wasn't. Music seemed easy, and I was able to focus on it. I could learn entire records and things, but, you know, you asked me to do a book report and read a page, I fall asleep, you know, at the first or second page. So I, music was my outlet, was my thing. And it gave me a purpose to, you know, not that there was the streets in Lake Tahoe, but it just kept me, you know, occupied and kept me out of trouble.
Right.
But as I progressed in my life through high school, you know, playing backyard parties and keggers and then, at a high school, it was, well, what are you going to do with your life? And I said, I'm going to go to music school. So I directly went to Los Angeles at 18 and started music school. And again, like talking about earlier, my career, I just sort of kept going and playing and auditioning and getting told no and all that stuff, and being in this band and being in the wrong band and being in that band and just playing and quitting and starting over again.
Yeah.
The whole thing, the story, just like everybody else knows. But eventually one day I got a break.
Yeah.
And I got asked to play with Ronnie James Dio.
Nice.
In 99, and from that it transitioned into me being with Alice Cooper, and from there I've played with Billy Bob Thornton. I've backed up Dee Snider from Twisted Sister, Ted Nugent, The Eagles, Journey, Judas Priest, Cheap Trick, just tons of different bands.
So you're living the dream.
So I've had the opportunity to play with these guys, Steven Tyler, the Doobie Brothers, you know, whether it be charity events or whatever, it's all been sort of something that I never thought in a million years that I'd play with all those bands. If you were to ask me in high school, would I play in a rock band, or would I play in a band like Alice Cooper, or would I play with Ronnie James Dio? I probably would have told you, yeah, I'm going to be there one day, no problem. But would they have said, are you going to play with all these other acts? I would have said, not in a million years. But it has been the case, and I've been very fortunate. And it's definitely something to where, to get somewhere in life, you got to have these sacrifices that you make. And like I said earlier, I have a 23-year-old daughter now, but at the time I was a single dad raising her, and a lot of times dad wasn't home. So those are the sacrifices. But, you know, we look back at it now and, you know, proud of everything I've done, every decision I made, and every hard decision I had to make. being a parent and having to leave and things like that. But we're both, you know, better people from it because it makes her strive, you know?
The sacrifices are hard. Yeah. I mean, but it's required almost in order to get to where you need to go. And it isn't always a sacrifice solely on your own. You know, the kids have to sacrifice dad being gone and the wife and, you know, family, all that kind of stuff.
And, I think wearing a suit and tie and working in a cubicle is a sacrifice that I hope I never have to make.
I don't have to do that either. We'll be doing office.
So you're right.
Too,
there are sacrifices out there. Jesus, on the way over here, I sacrificed my own life, it seemed like, just driving traffic.
So. They're out there. Brilliant, isn't it? The drivers, everything. Yeah. Yeah, I love California. I say California in general.
Oh, so we are in California.
Yeah, we are here.
I'm sending a ping off my phone. Please send a helicopter quick.
So what was the first band that you were in that was somewhat successful that you got your foothold in of your own band.
My own band.
Yeah.
Bisto Blanco is my first real attempt at my own band, to be quite honest with you. I've had other things. Like I said, I played with Dio. I've played with Alice Cooper. But these bands were already established.
Yeah.
I've had other little things here and there, but nothing has really sort of taken hold and stuck and has generated as much success as Bisto Blanco.
Well, you were in a band, The Barons.
Sure.
Before.
Yeah.
And some of that influence has made its way to the Live Fast, Die Loud.
Yeah, it was a short-lived band, one of my bunch of my buddies in there. And yeah, so we recorded a couple of songs that ended up, Live Fast, Die Loud was a song we recorded that ended up on the first Bisto Blanco record. And I'd learned a lot from those guys, the drummer and lyricist, main songwriter, Dave Casey. He really helped me understand how to sing and, you know, songwrite and figure out, you know, just stay true to your identity and things like that. But the Barons were sort of taking, you know, trying to just have fun, a bunch of guys just having fun making music. But I certainly got the Alice Cooper gig in the middle of that and you know, had to kind of veer off.
You got to go where you got to go.
Yeah, right? I didn't. And I was in Alice for years. I mean, I think I started in Alice in 2002. So I was in Alice for 10 years, if not more, before I even started the Bisto Blanco band.
What made you start Bisto Blanco? I mean, you know, you're with Alice Cooper, you're doing good, you know.
Yeah, what was I thinking, right? I had all this time off. I was enjoying my life. I could go on vacations. No, you know what we should do? Let's start a band so you have no time now at home and you have no time to do anything with your life.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. You know, man, I just I kind of have a tendency to get a little bored. I had all these songs just lying around, and I love the idea of creating something from nothing. I like that. I think it's kind of a cool thing. So I had all this stuff floating around in my head, and I wanted to manifest it. I wanted to see it become reality. So it's, you know, I had these ideas of what the band would look like or sound like or what the shows would be like and all that kind of stuff. So I just wanted to see how much of it I could get done. I had some time off and I had the people around me to make it happen. So that's what I did. And it sort of blossomed into something that now, a lot of people are taking seriously, including, you know, myself. I work on it every day. I got great band members.
Yeah. No, so the band's awesome.
Thanks, man.
You guys put together a great band, you know, it's like a family. It's not even a band. It's
like
awesome.
Family.
I mean, when
I'm mad at every single one of them. I try to tell them all to go to their room and,
doesn't
you know,
work,
clean
does
up
it?
Their room, and they don't do any of it. They're just mad at me all the time. They call me Bisto Basso. I'm never invited to any of the parties on tour, nothing. All I do is hear about it or, you know,
well,
see
you
it. I see it online, like, oh, you guys went out last night and had fun? And they're like, yeah, it was awesome. And I was like in my room, you know, watching Netflix.
Well, you're probably one of the higher energy guys that I've ever met.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, put the Energizer Bunny to shame. I mean,
well, have you been to one of our shows before? Have you seen who's next to me all the time running around? And you got a Dodge Calico with a bat or a CO2 gun or whatever. Yeah, I'm just trying to run from her.
You bring your A game or you're going to get your ass handed to you on that stage.
Actually, I found that the more I stand still, then it's kind of just
a little bit safer.
Yeah. She'll just move around me, you know what I mean?
No, it's good, man. You guys got some great tunes. You know, I
I met you, I don't know, what, 3 years ago or whatever, yeah, and it was on the tour. You know,
yeah.
You didn't know me. I didn't know you. I was intimidated to hell because I really didn't know what I was going to do or, you know.
I use that to my advantage, just so you know.
Yeah, I know that. I know that. You kept me on my toes the whole time.
Because you're a big dude.
It worked.
And I loved giving you shit the whole time. It was the best part of that tour.
Yeah, but I see you've transferred giving shit to other people now, so I appreciate that.
I'm really good at it, man. I'm really good at it. I'm going to have to thank my brothers for this, man.
Yeah, I bet it was all those ass beatings that you got, right?
Man, it was rough.
So anyway, you start Bisto Blanco.
Yeah.
And heck, you guys have three albums out now.
We have two studio records, one live album, and we're about ready to release our third studio
record.
And
that live album, by the way, is awesome.
Thank you.
And you know what I compare it to? And, you know, forgive me if it's a slant on you or not, but I'm not a big live album person.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, the recordings aren't always that great or whatever. The first live album I ever listened to that I loved was Scorpions Worldwide Live.
Sure, okay.
And I compare you guys' sound to that.
Nice.
You sound like Bisto Blanco. Now, I've seen your shows and I've listened to the you know, the studio stuff, so I kind of already know what to expect a little bit. But if you listen to the live record, it's freaking good, man.
Thanks,
and you can imagine yourself being there. Again, I've been to the show, so I kind of know it, but it puts me in that place. And it sounds so good. And, you know, I'm like waiting for you to say, tell me do push-ups or something. I'm like, it's
well, coming. It was sort of like our, like, sort of, you know, a lot of people, because we are so busy with, you know, my touring with Alice and, you know, Calico's acting and, you know, everybody's sort of got separate lives too. So when we do have free time, that's when we go to the Bisto and start touring and all that. But a lot of people, a lot of our fans that have been growing worldwide don't have a chance or haven't had a chance to see us yet.
Right.
And so this was sort of their way of sort of a front row, you know, close your eyes. Now you're at a Bisto Blanco show. And it was important for us to sort of give them a sort of what to do and what not to do at a Bisto Blanco show. And I guess there's really not what not to do, but maybe just how to participate, songs to sing on and things like that. So it was just me growing up, you know, I would look at, you know, Kiss Alive or Peter Frampton or Live at Budokan or, you know, Scorpions and all those kind of things. You hear and you see these record covers.
Right.
And then you kind of could just imagine what it was actually like to be at that show.
Right.
You know, Ted Nugent, 10 Cities and 10 Cities and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you were just able to kind of put yourself in that, you know, in that seat. And you never gave yourself the, you know, the back row. You're always front row when you're visualizing being there. So I think it's been a good tool for us, and most of the fans have really enjoyed the live album.
Yeah, no, it's good. I listened to it when I mowed the lawn a few weeks ago, and I was like, right on, man, this is good shit.
I'll play. Do you mow Chris's lawn? Because you're doing one terrible job at that.
Yeah, well,
so you know,
does Chris have a lawn?
I think you're going a little too short on that lawn, bro. Yeah.
Might want to raise the blade up above ground.
Yeah.
I think we're rototilling at this point.
I don't know, man.
Oh.
Must be a bunker down there.
Yeah, well, and you guys have a new record coming here hopefully this year.
That's the goal. I think, you know, if it was up to me, this record would have been done already. I was looking for an April release, but, you know, I can only make things happen. You know, it's hard.
Yeah.
But we're finishing up now. I just, here in LA, I've just been finishing up my vocals and bass parts and things like that. Chris still got some guitar parts to do, but we've all been kicking ass. I think the songs are amazing. You know, a lot of people say this, but I think it's the best stuff we've ever come up with. It's a little bit more rounded and, you know, a little bit. We're trying some things that are a little different than the first record and the second record. And I just think as a whole, you can listen to all three albums and they're just going to fit together so perfectly. But at the same time, you're going to see a little bit of growth in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what life's about, right? You know what I mean? You just kind of you don't want to do the same thing all the time. You definitely are gonna, it's always going to sound like Bisto Blanco, but we're multi-talented and we can stretch our wings a little bit. And when you have like a Calico Cooper in the band, you can try different things because it's a tool that not a lot of bands have. And I love the sounds that come out of that and how we have to write for her and how, what it adds to the show. And we are a theatrical band. We are a band that you want to see live because there's so much going on. It's not just a couple guys standing up there. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I love that too, but it's just not the world that I come from. I've been with Alice for so many years that I've learned that you got you got to put together a show. And I knew that that was going to happen when Calico and I hit the stage, and that it was just going to become its own thing. We weren't going to try to control it.
Right.
We just sort of had a little vision and then planted the seed, and that the rest blossomed.
Well, and that's a cool, I mean, I'm sure there's some Alice Cooper influence on your show.
Yeah.
Since that's what you do, like you just said. But what I like is you guys are willing to try anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, at least once. And, you know, you made me your prostitute, props guy, whatever. That
was a bad decision.
And so, yeah.
Hey, man, I got, for all you listeners out there looking for a props guy, Dave is definitely not a guy you want to consider as a...
Not unless you like the Good Idea Fairy riding your shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. Great. You did great, man. I find in life that when you do things, especially for the first time or whatever, you haven't made a mistake yet, you got to make mistakes in order to learn from it. And by being an expert at something, you have to do it in repetition. You have to do a lot of it. And that's just the thing, man. We did what, couple of shows, and, and you know, it stuff happens and mistakes happen. I just, and when you're in an environment, when you're on stage and you're playing live, it's especially being Bisto Blanco. I know for myself, and I know probably Calico thinks the same way, is that I'm not the same guy necessarily as I am off stage as I am on stage. I have to sort of take on a different character. Otherwise, I'd be scared shitless to be up there, and I'd be nervous wreck. But if I kind of create an alter ego, which has become Bisto Blanco, then I'm able to sort of go out there and become this different character and things. So when shit goes wrong or whatever, I may turn around and just look at you with this look of like, what the hell are you doing? But it's not really what I mean, but it's on stage, man, a second lasts a minute. And you know what I mean? Things just seem to last longer. I've learned that, you know, sometimes my initial reaction on stage can get a little intense.
Yeah.
But it works, you know, because who knows?
Let's go to a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about that kook that ran across the stage in Cooperstown. Sound good?
All right, man. Whatever.
All right. Right on. All right. Again, you're listening to dvradio.net. I'm David Libby, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
DV Radio.
And now, your President of the United States.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not
who
your country can do for you. Ask
who
you can do for your country.
You've just heard the President of the United States in his wismatic words to our people. Head over to my DVStore.com to grab this shirt with that quote and much more DV gear. Stop buying the war bonds. We're out of that now. Go and support your local DV and the local DV radio station. Grab your stuff today.
DV Radio is for our fellow brothers and sisters, and it's all free of charge for our listeners, our guests, and even those that have shows right here on DVRadio.net. We do everything in-house, from mixing and recording ads and shows to the website and all that you get from us. We love promoting veteran-owned businesses and highlighting those in the veteran community. So if you would like to continue to hear what we bring to you and have even more in the future with the best quality that we can possibly bring to you, please head over to DVRadio.net and click that PayPal donation button. Any amount is welcome, from $1 to $100 million that your uncle lets you in his trust fund. So please head over to dvradio.net and click that PayPal donation button right now. Oh, ah.
DV Radio. Okay, redo. I can't do it now.
Let's dubstep it up a little bit.
Number two.
Remix.
Remix.
Number two.
Remix.
Number two.
Remix.
Okay, redo.
Number two.
Remix. That's what happens when you're reading.
That a little spice.
spice to your life with the Scrotal Discussions right here on DVRadio.net, Wednesdays, 2000 8 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, yes. Man, we should keep that one.
All right, welcome back to Contraband on DVRadio.net. I'm David Libby, and we are still here with Chuck Garrick. He did not leave, nor did he get away. So,
because you guys have to untie me from this chair.
Well, you know, we got our methods. All right.
I'm serious, people. I'm tied to this chair in a bunker somewhere in California.
Just so you know, we give him water, so he's fine. He's just whining. We loosen the rope, so he's good. So anyway, so yeah, we're talking about shit going wrong.
Yeah.
In Arizona, you know, we were doing the show, and what happened?
Well, quick story. Dave's helping with props. What was it that we had at the?
What brought you on stage?
Oh, that's right. So I used to wear these. This just goes to show you how ridiculous this is, what I'm about to tell you right now. But yeah, so my buddy Todd Junker designed these shoulder pads that look like something from Mad Max or something like that. Yeah. You know, these dead babies all over them and, you know, this armor. He called it the death armor, Todd did. And it was pretty cool. So we would, at one part of the show, I would go to the side of the stage and Dave's job was to put the armor on. Actually, I came out with them.
I used to come
out with the armor on, and so after a couple of songs, I realized how ridiculous it is that I'm playing with these shoulder pads on, so I needed to get them off, but I needed help. So we came up with this bit where after three songs, Dave comes on stage and grabs the armor from me. And so instead of just me going to him, Dave comes out to me and takes the armor off and then decides to walk all the way across the stage. Instead of just taking the shortcut, he makes this big presentation. This normal guy walking across
15 seconds of fame.
Walks across the stage, and it just threw me for a loop. I'm just thinking, don't you walk it? What are you thinking? You know. So then I came up with the idea, all right, so from now on, anybody who comes on stage has to have a mask or something on, so at least it looks like part of the show, and not just like some dude off
some
the street coming up there
grabbing a souvenir. On
you. Yeah, so so that mistake actually helped us out, man.
Yeah,
so
it's a learning point there. Yeah, so man. Yeah, we figured.
So there, I guess there are no such things as mistakes; they're just learning experiences, yeah, right? Yeah,
exactly. There was actually one time where I was gonna have to jump on stage to help with Chris,
yeah,
and they actually looked to you, were just like, "Does Jeff need a mask?" And you just looked at me and went,
he's fine.
You yeah. get that big pumpkin Jeff in a mask. You, don't even, you need a kid. Garbage sack or something. Yeah. Got some eye holes in it.
Well, I'm just afraid to tell him no.
Oh, I see. You respect him more than me. I get it.
He knows karate, it's man. I think I've been dead for like 5 years. I just don't know it yet. Yeah, he's exactly. done some weird, like,
he gave you that heart death punch, you know, or
judo
something.
Thing on me that I'll probably feel in a couple hours.
So, yeah, no, it's not mistakes. It's just, it was fun because, you know, we talked after the show. You're like, oh, shit, maybe I shouldn't have. You told me to do push-ups.
Yeah.
You're like, God damn it, Dave, what are you doing, man? Run across the stage, drop it, give me 20. I'm like, I'll see you at the show.
You're a good dude, man. You know, some people take it so serious, and we got to have fun out there. Yeah. And I think of that tour and a lot of tours that we've done, I've really learned to just have fun and let that kind of stuff happen because it just makes for the interesting stories. I mean, you know, it's like Calico said earlier, it's like those stories that we talk about on the road and us carving our way. And, you know, it's made us who we are. And it's fun to have those stories now. I mean, we have years of them, you know, breaking down. And at the time, it's a nightmare. But now you look back and it's really cool that we have
that
stuff.
It's what you remember.
Yeah, yeah. You know? It's
and
part
then
of
you
our
laugh
journey.
About it or
yeah,
whatever.
It's, we survived, we lived, yeah. and you know, and the end of the day, we're tighter because of it, and I realize now why bands like the Stones or, you know, the bands that I loved growing up, and they've got stories like that as well, right. You know, maybe yeah. not so much now, but back in the days they have to, right? So it's cool that we have those stories. It makes me feel like we're really doing it.
Yeah, yeah. No, and you guys, you know, you guys are great supporting us, you know, and the vets and,
oh, yeah,
and
of course you have
all
to.
That. I mean, we got a couple guys.
We wouldn't be able to do if it wasn't for your service.
Yeah,
you
know? Well, no, appreciate
we salute
it.
Everybody out there that served in the military. I mean, it's important, and I try to recognize anybody in the crowd or the airport or, you know, in line at the post office. I mean, it's a very serious, serious duty that you guys do. And it's, you're putting your, you know, you're taking your life, giving up your life possibly, for our country and for our freedom. And that's massive. And, yeah. I give you guys all a big hug and all that. I think it's amazing.
Yeah,
and
well,
I'm
thanks,
so
Sean,
grateful
and,
for
and
it.
Our listeners appreciate yeah,
absolutely.
It too.
Absolutely. So
know?
Everybody out there, thank you, thank you, thank you, because I think there's not a day that goes by that I travel all over the world. I've seen all kinds of stuff out there, and I'm having a good time, but there's nothing like coming home to the United States.
Right.
There just isn't, and I'm so thankful for this country. I love it.
Yeah, no, it's a good country. And
I fight for it too, man.
Yeah. You're fighting for it with six strings.
Four.
Four.
Most of
yeah,
the time.
That's right. No, yeah.
Even when I'm playing guitar, I think I'm only playing four.
You only use one, though, right?
But I'm damn good.
And it's
with
not
it.
Connected, so. No. And your dad, he tried to get in the military.
Yeah. So I was talking about my dad earlier. My dad was a loved math and, you know, engineering, things like that. And at a young age, my dad was a master mechanic. He loved building cars and motorcycles. And in the 60s, he, at age 14, he built a Harley Davidson from the ground up, him and my godfather. And how they got the parts were from a biker gang in San Francisco in the 60s. I'm sure you all know exactly who I'm talking about. But they would trade parts, and my dad built a bike up from there. And as my dad got older in his teenage years, 18, 19, 20 years old, mm-hmm. he was part of that organization, but loved it because he loved to build.
Yeah.
Loved to ride. It was his passion. But it was also the time when the Vietnam War was happening. So my dad enlisted, wanted to be go to join the fight. Where most people were either trying to dodge the draft or drafted.
And
my dad wanted to go.
Yeah.
He wanted to go because he wanted to work on the jet airplanes. That was like his thing. That's what he wanted to do. And he was very passionate about it. So the little biker gang I talked about sort of threw a party for my dad. And this was before he met my mom. And it would be a party that I think most rock stars at that time would have loved to be part of. There was some mamas involved and things like that. You know, hey, this guy's going off to war, man. Let's send him out, you know, sort of with this
style.
So he goes, they have this big party and what have you. And they goes and does the physical and all that stuff. And it turned out my dad had inverted eardrums.
Really?
So he couldn't hear certain frequencies.
Yeah.
So they didn't take him. Huh. And it's one of those things where, like, he realized after that he never knew that.
Yeah.
And he always wondered why he was, in a way, tone deaf.
Yeah.
There was things he just couldn't hear. There's frequencies that just, you know. So, well, thank God that was the outcome, because after that he met my mom and they moved to Tahoe and I was born.
Yeah.
And who knows what would have happened. But, it was just kind of, I think it was something that he was really proud of. At least he
tried,
man, to do it. And he always kind of loved that story anyway, because he thought it was hilarious, because he comes back the next day and goes, hey guess what?
He got the party and he didn't have
exactly.
to go. Shit, that's all right.
But he, you know, it was a good story. And then after that, I think he settled down and raised a family and did an amazing job at it.
Yeah. Well, we thank God that he had you, because without you, there would be no Bisto Blanco, right?
Yeah, exactly, man. Well,
So to our listeners out there, what would you recommend? You know, somebody wants to do what you're doing or get into the music biz. I mean, what do you?
I think you just got to have a passion for it, for whatever it is. Whatever you decide to do, if it's, you know, like I was telling you earlier, my dad loved being a mechanic, and he sort of made that into his life. He, you know, worked as a fireman, but at the same time, he would you know, because being a fireman, he had 24 hours on, 24 hours off. So he took up other hobbies and would help build cars with his neighbors or things like that. He would just, whatever it is you decide to do, you have to have a passion for it. Like I said earlier, I just really didn't have a passion for anything other than music when I was a kid. It just seemed like a logical step. Right. My daughter, at a young age, before she could even, you know, speak really, was had a pencil in her hand and was drawing mm-hmm. whatever it was. And I noticed it as a parent, and I encouraged it her whole entire life. She's now graduated as a graphic designer and as a computer programmer, because it was something she just always did naturally. It's a God-given talent. Right. So whatever it is that you do, whatever it is you have a passion for, then you just do it.
Right.
You know, and it should just make you happy and just give you some sort of release. So if it's music or, you know, archery or hunting or, you know, boating or acting or whatever, accounting, whatever it is, if you love to do it, just, you know, you're able to go through the process
right.
of failure.
Yeah.
I think anytime you want to succeed with anything, there's going to be failure. And if you sort of take that failure as more of a way of summoning courage mm-hmm. instead of treating it as failure, then you'll reach the next plateau. So with music, I just think there's a lot of failure. With mm-hmm. acting, there's a lot of failure, but you know, a lot of people telling you, no, you don't look right. No, mm-hmm. you don't play like that. You know, and especially in the industry we're in, it's a lot of that.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, think about what you're asking for. It's kind of a big thing. You know, you're asking to make money at the arts.
Right.
And then on top of you're asking it to be famous and things like that. Yeah. And I'm sorry, man, but that stuff just doesn't happen right. unless it's just meant to be, or there's some luck involved, or you work your ass off and you forge your way through. Right. So I think a lot of things for me has been, you know, trial by error. I know, like, when I run out of gas in my car, that I should fill it up before that happens, right? But maybe you got to do it once.
A little bit.
You got to do it once or twice to figure it out, right?
Yep.
When I was a kid, I just got my two front teeth in, and I was spinning around in a circle with my buddy to see if we could get how dizzy we could get. And we got really dizzy.
Yeah.
And I fell flat on my face and chipped my tooth. And so my family was really big in shooting archery.
Yeah.
So it happened during that time that we were practicing. So luckily our dentist was shooting archery with us. So he takes me to the office that night to fix my tooth.
Yeah.
So about a week later, my friend goes, "Hey, how did you crack your tooth?" And I said, "Ah, I was spinning around like this. And I was spinning, and I fall, and bam, I crack my tooth again." So my dad looked at me, and he said, "Boy, I think you're an idiot."
Yeah.
I said, "I think so, too." And he goes, "If you didn't learn this time, you ain't ever going to learn."
So you fix your own teeth.
So I had to go back, get the tooth fixed. But my point is that you got to just figure it out, man. Right. So whatever it is, if you want to get into music or you want to get into whatever makes you happy, then just be willing to fail, and have fun.
Having the passion is the key. And, you know, I look at you. You work your ass off. Like I said, I see you. You got a lot of energy, and you put it. You're working all the time.
Yeah.
But you're having a good time doing it.
For the most part. Yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, it's ups and downs. Yeah. But you don't get through the downs because you're not happy with it. You're not. It's your passion.
Yeah.
You've muscled through those down times so you can get back on top and do what you need to do.
Look, man, truth be told, we just had rehearsal the other day, and I think our first rehearsal, I'm in the car thinking, the fuck are we doing? What am I doing?
Yeah.
This isn't right. You know, this doesn't sound right, or this is frustrating. What? And I was frustrated.
Yeah.
Because I knew it could be better. But then you got to go, okay, well, hold on. Don't point fingers. How does it need to get better? Okay, well, maybe we should set the amps up differently, or, you know, we should really run the set down slower. What do I need to do to make it better? And all that stuff. And the next day, it was 100 times better, you know, because of the frustration, because I say frustration, but I guess more desire to make it perfect.
Right.
And that's sort of where it's at. And I think some people get discouraged when things go wrong. They just quit, you know, and they say, I don't do this, you know, because it's hard.
Yeah.
It is hard. And you're putting yourself out in front of people to go, well, that sucked.
Yeah. It's easy to get criticized for sure.
And you guys are terrible. Yeah. You're like, well, why? Why are we terrible? Tell me. Right. I can maybe what you have to say could help make me out. Better.
Yeah.
And there was a review on our show we did in Germany, and it was not a good review about the band at all.
Yeah.
But I remember the show. And I remember then the guy was really criticizing my vocals and sort of the songs a little bit. And I remember thinking during that show, man, I am singing like shit, this is terrible. I couldn't help it, you know?
Yeah.
Just one of those nights. But I read the review and I thought, man, he's right on a couple of these things. And then the next record, I'm going to take some of that advice and I'm going to tweak it a little bit and I'm going to grow from it instead of getting discouraged and go, yeah, I'm going to quit.
Right.
Because this guy doesn't like me. Right. You know, I'm going to try to make it better, you know, at least try.
Yeah.
That's all. You know,
no, that's the best way to take criticism. It's like, it's not a, well, in some cases, most cases, not a beat down, but you know, you got those people out there that just want to hate. Haters going to hate. But, you know, if you look at it as like you're looking at it, you don't look at it as a beat down or I should quit or you look at it as, hey, here's my improvements. How easy was that? The guy told me what I needed to fix.
Yeah.
So I don't have to figure it out now. He just told me what it was.
Yeah.
So if I fix these things and I'm hearing, you know, if you hear it commonly, especially across the board, you know, people saying, yeah, this is wrong, that, you know, and it becomes a common thing, then you can fix it or adjust it or whatever you need to do to tweak it to make it work. On the flip side of that, if it's just your thing, oh, he sounds like, you know, he sounds like Chuck Garrett. Well, guess what? It's fucking Chuck Garrett. He's going to sound like that. So you're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah. There's some things you just can't fix, you know?
Right.
Some things you can't change, I guess.
Right. Right.
I think everybody too, is you got to be open for that. I mean, you got to be open for change. And sometimes like, especially like we're recording our new record and you don't think the songs sound a lot different now than what they did when I actually wrote them. So I always think like, I can't get too caught up on how I want it to sound. Oh, it doesn't sound exactly the way. Right. Doesn't mean it's worse. It just means it's different. And you got to sort of let, you can't sit there and try to micromanage something because it'll never get done. A record is never finished, man.
Right. Especially when you're working with other people. Yeah. They have a vision also.
Exactly.
And they have an idea of how it should sound. So, and it's bringing that together. And actually, brings more out of the, makes a song better when you get not too many more influences, but you know, and you got Chris you're working with.
And everybody just sort of is passionate for the same things. It's a song.
Right.
So to your listeners out there, if you're doing something, I think personally, it's like surround yourself with people that you trust.
Right.
And whatever it is, again, like if it's your wife or it's your husband or if it's your family members or somebody that you know is not going to go, oh man, that's amazing, buddy. You're great when you know it sucks.
Right.
You need somebody to tell you, sucks. You can do better. You need that, you know, and just get a partner that you trust and that motivates you. And it'll probably piss you off.
Yeah. No, it'll
usually. Nobody likes to hear that, exactly. Right? But then after you calm down for a little bit, you go, you know what? I think they're right. I think I can be better.
Because where does the improvement come for a pat on the back?
Exactly.
It's like, okay, I did great.
Who wants a yes man
all the time?
What do I need
to do to fix stuff
when you become rich and famous? You can hire yes men all around.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll be putting in for an application for that job too, by the way,
for a yes man.
Yeah.
Just when don't you mess it up,
get that.
Dave was probably the only one to mess up being a yes man.
Exactly. Hey, it's what I do, right?
Knowing Dave,
he'll screw. I have an idea how to be a yes man.
All right, the yes man is going to take a break and scoop up his pride, and then we
see it works.
Back,
see, we're giving you constructive criticism right now.
All right, we'll be right back after a short break. Don't forget to go to mydvstore.com and get your DV merch. And if you put in some overtime at the old shop, go ahead and head over to warriorservice.org and pick yourself up another T-shirt. And if your wardrobe's full, go over to socialband.com and buy yourself a CD. Chuck, you got bistoblanco.com. If they
bistoblanco.com, you can find our our store there to shop for merch,
everything.
CDs, T-shirts, hats, all the good stuff. You know, Instagram for updates and things like that, Facebook, all the social networks we're on. Yeah, man. I mean, there's all kinds of new stuff happening. So log in, do what you got to do, hit like, whatever you got to do. I don't know all this stuff.
Right on. Well, we're going to be right back and summarize this interview with Mr. Chuck Garrick. So stay tuned.
There's a smell in the air today. No, it isn't those beans you had last night either. It's an explosion of napalm in the AM and all natural soap only from KBarSoapCo.com. So start your day off as Lieutenant Colonel Kilgore does with the smell of napalm in the AM only from KBarSoapCo.com.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
That's KBarSoapCo.com.
Don't touch anybody and don't yell.
This is The Account.
The Account, as Ron Ripley knows.
I'll give it a whirl.
You gotta give it a whirl, man. Yeah. That's good stuff.
The safe word is harder.
Wow. That's a vision right there.
From Studio 395 in San Diego, California.
I feel pretty darn good.
It's the Struggle Brothers Show.
I'll need a fucking Tide Pod right now. I don't give a shit.
We talked about this.
Anyone that's offended, fuck them.
I'm a big fan, personally.
Purple fart box. Status. Over.
Oh, boss. We're snafu here.
Snafu. Situation normal. All fouled up.
Coming soon from our very own snafu. Every branch has it.
Drop and give me push-up.
No one wants to be it.
You will continue to do push-up until you learn to address me as first sergeant. Use that plan.
The snafu. Music Hour.
Where the hell have you been, soldier?
Right here on WDVRDVRadio.net.
That's a fact, Jack!
Stay tuned to DVRadio.net for more information.
These are exactly the kind of go-getters I want working on my EM50 project in Italy.
I see a little bit of foreskin.
Because this is how it is.
Good thing we didn't say you better tune in. This is one for the record books. You don't want to miss it.
We'll talk quietly amongst ourselves.
This is fucking fantastic.
On DV Radio.
DV Radio. Butt hurters, how many times have you found things make your butt hurt because you're easily offended? Now, at last, somebody has done something about this condition. Butt hurters' friend is on the market. A scientifically blended preparation manufactured especially for crybabies' butts. When used daily, helps prevent bleeding, leakage, burning, promotes healing, and in general keeps your butt in tip-top condition for hurting when it's needed.
DV Radio.
Back to Contraband on DVRadio.net. I'm David Libby, and this is still Chuck Garrick.
Yes.
How's it going? Yeah,
good.
I'm making sure.
Good, brother.
He's made his way through his ropes.
Yeah,
I think he's getting ready to bust out of here. So we'll be wrapping this up. But hey, what do you have going on for your future?
As far as with Bisto, we're finishing up the record now. We've got the ride for Ronnie James Dio on May 6th in Encino, California. And then June, we're heading over to Leipzig, Germany, Hungary, Budapest, Italy, do a couple of shows there.
Nice.
And then July, we're taking off to run states, starting in Illinois and ending in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I think that's July 19th through the 28th. And then I'll start back up with Alice Cooper August through October. And then back on the road with Bisto in November. So, yeah. Right. I have a house that
yeah,
I visit.
Have you seen it?
It's a nice house, man. But yeah, I go there to fix stuff and then take off again.
Nice. Oh. Yeah, right on. Well, yeah. You're a busy man, and I, you know, my hat's off to you for all the energy you have for music and what you do with Bisto Blanco. I appreciate 100% for letting us come in and help out with your shows and get to know the road and the music biz. And, well, you know, Dave, man, I was ribbing you,
but we love you, man. Oh, and we're so proud of you. And I think this radio show is awesome. And you've always been dedicated to helping the vets out there. And you're a guy that definitely gives back. And I think that's one of the most important things in life is not going to rest with all of it in one big box.
You can't take it all with you, so you might as well give a little bit away every day as you go, you know?
So whatever that might be, but all seriousness, man, we appreciate it, and we love you to death, and we're so grateful for your friendship.
Awesome freaking band, awesome people. You guys have got to get out and see a Bisto Blanco show. You're going to be on the East Coast here in later
Midwest
on, right?
in July.
Midwest,
yeah.
Okay. So,
plenty of servicemen out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys get your freaking get your LESs and figure out your paychecks so you can get out there and see a Bisto Blanco show. I guarantee you will not be disappointed. If you're disappointed, then hell with you. How's that? No, it's
hey, we'll
a good
figure
show.
Something out. If
it's
you can't afford to go to the show, just let me know. I'll let you in for free.
There you go.
If you're a serviceman or woman out there, why not?
Hey, well, you heard it from the man himself.
You're there. We'll let you in. Great. What have I started?
Yeah. Show your military ID, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think why not?
Yeah, that'd be
100%.
Cool.
And I'll say it right now on record. If you want to come see us in July and you can't afford to get there or you know can't afford a ticket and want to come, then you be our guest. Our pleasure.
You can pick them up,
too? Eh. My tank's not that fast, man. I don't know if I can make it there and back in time for the show.
All right on, man. Again, like I said, thanks for coming in. Thanks for everything you do. And you're freaking cool, man.
Cool.
Thank you. All right. So that wraps up yet another show. Don't forget to visit mydvstore.com and warriorservice.org and sosurband.com as well as beastablanco.com. And we'll see how all this stuff pans out.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks again.
Okay. Bye.
Peace.
Radio.